Accession number 13122, Rondinins, Reel 5.
Mr. Dinan, Reel 5, we were talking about your time with your platoon at Roccascoli, and you were just telling the story of how someone, a pneumonia case, you diagnosed a pneumonia case amongst your men.
Yes. So I got four or five soldiers to carry this man across into the main building. This we did by finding a door and got him onto the door, covered him in blankets, and carried him out across some very uneven ground. Actually, they were digging foundations for the Nissen huts to be mounted. And in part of the journey, unfortunately, they fell down in one of the trenches, and this poor man was rolled over and into the bottom of the trench. We then managed to get him out again and carried on the journey into the main building. I then had to find ways and means of getting to a doctor.
Now your doctor, the battalion MO, he was nowhere around, was he?
No, our own particular doctor was down in Borgarnes, where our headquarters was, many miles away. About 100, I think. So I managed to get an Icelandic man, fisherman, who had a truck, and he was able to drive me some 25 miles away to an Icelandic doctor who accepted my diagnosis and gave me some drugs that would cure the pneumonia. I got back and administered the drugs, and happily, within 7 days, he was back on duty again.
But other than that, you didn't have problems with the health of the men?
No, there were no problems, normal running of things. They were quite well behaved, and the work kept them busy from all the daylight hours.
Now, once just picking up stories from the notes, you were in a bit of a storm at sea when you went out to the store ship that was bringing up your stores. Do you remember that incident?
Yes, I had to go down to see the captain of the ship that was unloading, where we were unloading, actually coal and coke to last us through the winter months, and coming back, the weather changed, and my journey back was quite horrendous, with waves anything up to 15 and 20 feet high, with the boat rising with each roller and dropping some 15 feet into the trough of the next wave. This became quite disturbing to me, although my fisherman who owned the boat tried to calm me down, saying it's quite all right, not to worry. And we made the journey of some 5 or 6 miles back to Roccascoli. And I was very heartened to see all my men waiting on the shore, watching my rather horrendous return. And I walked very tall that day.
Now, what about the weather? It was getting into winter, you know, you'd got there in December at Roccascoli. I mean, how bad was the weather by say, English standards?
Oh, it was dreadful. Unfortunately, a storm, heavy snowstorm, or blizzard, was upon us before we realised what was going on, and every precaution had to be taken to ensure that no man was put at risk by wandering off in this, what might turn out to be a terrible storm.
How long were you at Recciascoli then before you had this visit from Gort? You got there in December.
Yes. As I recall, he came at the beginning of January on a visit round the island, and he came to Recciascoli quite surprisingly early. And my colleague and I had agreed that...
Which colleague? You mean the artillery officer?
No, I had another officer. And my second in command.
What was his name?
He was called Hugh Wares, and had been an old friend of mine for many years.
Now, what did you... You'd agreed with him?
We had agreed that he would go down and see to the troops and get the guard ready for the arrival of the field marshal, and I would get on with the administrative jobs and also get washed and dressed. And in my horror, I was busy shaving when I looked out of the window and saw a string of staff cars approaching the building. I thought, good heavens, it must be the general. And I immediately thought, well, I can't do much about it. So I carried on washing and shaving and dashed down as quickly as I could to see the party who had passed the guard and gone to look at the 4-inch naval guns. I dashed across as quickly as possible, and my general came towards me and apologised that they had passed the guard and that he would introduce me to Lord Gort at the opportune moment. This happened, and I was introduced to the field marshal, and we finished looking at the guns and walked back towards the building where he inspected the guard. We then went into the building and looking at the heated swimming pool. Lord Gort turned to me and said, "This is an extraordinary building, and you must feel very comfortable," and said you could probably stay here for at least 2 years. And I was quite horrified, because the men were hoping to get back to UK within 6 months. And then quite suddenly, Lord Gort produced a tin of mint humbugs and asked me if I cared to have one. This shook me considerably, as I looked upon him with such awe to think that a man of his standing would offer me a mint humbug was quite a surprise.
Did he? So he obviously made a good impression on you.
Oh, he did indeed. I was very impressed, not only for his experience, but he was a real gentleman.
Did you explain or take him round all your defence works, and what did he think of what you'd
yes.
done? Because you were in charge.
Yes. When he decided he would like to look at the other defences, so I said, well, we would have to go in the cars. So he did. He helped me into his car. And we drove out about half a mile away, where I had prepared what I thought were the correct defences, as there was a huge area of open ground between Wreckersgowly and the sea.
Do you mean the sea or the you mean the field?
No, the sea. And
behind the field, sort of.
Yes. So he immediately saw the problem and turned round to the general and said, "This is quite beyond my thoughts." He said, "We must have a re-look at this whole situation, and it's quite obvious that this detachment of 50 troops is insufficient for the situation." And actually, within a week, I was sent to a place further around the coast where my company headquarters were, and I was replaced by a full company in charge of a major.
Was it from your battalion or from a different battalion?
No, this is from our battalion. And I rejoined my company at Blondes.
Where was Blondes?
Blondes was approximately 80 to 100 miles further round the coast.
That's where you dropped them when you first arrived?
When we first arrived, yes. The company had dropped off the ship first.
So would that be in January, February 41 then?
Yes. It was very early January.
Now, what was the situation at Blondes? I mean, you were no longer in charge, obviously.
No,
your company
no.
commander was in charge. But what had they done? And what was
they had the company there had made defences similar to what I had done. And they had another section of artillery of their own. And they had a section of Royal Engineers also. And they had to set up an outpost about 7 miles to the north. In actual fact, it was acted as a sort of lookout for any scale of invasion of the island.
Did it have a name, the outpost?
Yes, they were situated in the area of a place called Skagastrand. And they had made a type of cave down the cliffs. And on one occasion, when we had a terrific storm.
Now, hang on, were you sent there straight away to Skagastrand on this outpost, or did you stay at Blondes originally?
This section of men was sent there. The remainder of the company were in Blondes itself.
But what happened to you first? Did you stay at Blondes for a while?
Oh, yes, I just carried on being in charge of my platoon, digging defences.
In the Blondes area?
In the Blondes area.
What sort of accommodation did they have there?
It was a hutted camp with Nissen huts. Quite a distance away, actually, from the village. It was on the other side of a small river.
Now, that would be a bigger village than the little hamlet
yes.
you've been with. What was Blondes like?
Blondes was a very, very small town of about 200 inhabitants with the normal type of wooden house. Quite a compact little village with all the facilities.
Now, you got on reasonably well with them again, did you?
Oh, yes. They were very friendly indeed, and we had a good rapport with the local people. Despite the language difficulties, we managed to get along very well together.
Now, what about the weather was getting worse? I understand at Blondus.
Yes.
What clothing had you been issued to try and ameliorate the effects?
We were issued with what was called a tropal coat.
A what coat?
A tropal coat. This was a type of raincoat with a lining. It was a sort of canvas cloth, and inside of that was some kind of packing, and with a high collar. But whilst it was useful in the cold weather, one couldn't certainly fight in such a piece of clothing like this. Normally, it was all right for doing normal work, but the weather unfortunately turned rather rough.
Did that not mean that the Germans were unlikely to arrive as well, as they presumably wouldn't be able to fight in their winter clothing either?
Yes.
Did you actually feel that when the weather broke?
Yes. I think we all felt, whilst it was a good idea against the cold weather, but for a warlike garment, it was the wrong thing, I considered. And would be no use whatever if the Germans came with proper clothing. We wouldn't stand a chance. I think we would have to discard our clothing to get the proper movement.
But what I mean was, didn't you feel that it was unlikely that the Germans would arrive in such conditions?
I don't think there was any feeling of any immediate attack. I think the general picture then was that the Germans were fully occupied elsewhere. Although we had heard that they had sent a small patrol to Iceland before we had ever got there. But I think obviously they had second thoughts about making any type of invasion of Iceland.
Right. Now, there was actually a blizzard hit the area, wasn't there? A major blizzard, yeah. As opposed to the general bad weather.
We were completely taken by surprise, actually. This blizzard hit the island to such a degree that the winds were up to 140 miles per hour. We had drifts of snow from 80 to 100 feet high. The dynamo that was situated in the river there, which supplied electricity to the whole village and to our camp. Yeah. Unfortunately, the first thing to go was the dynamo that supplied electricity had been iced up and covered in snow. So this meant that the supply of bread ceased, and this affected the villagers and it affected us, and we had to adopt ourselves to tinned rations.
Could you get out of your huts in weather like that? Could you get out of your huts in weather like that?
No. After the first day, we were completely blocked in with snow. And the Nissen huts were filling with snow in the doorways. They had a 6-foot entrance and double doors. And these were very, very quickly filled with snow, and for anyone to enter or leave the hut, immediately someone had to jam the door and ensure that it was kept closed.
Did you have the parties digging paths between the huts, or?
We couldn't do a thing to help the troops. What we did was to issue each hut with a supply of tin rations and told them to get on with looking after themselves. This was a drastic situation. I accepted that. With only two coke-burning stoves in the hut, there was nothing else to help them to cook a meal. They had to do just the best thing they could under the circumstances.
They had lost the cookhouse, hadn't you? It might have been irrelevant that you lost it if you couldn't get the thing between the huts. But
unfortunately, in the first day, we had lost our cookhouse, having it burned down.
How had that happened?
Apparently, the cook who was on duty couldn't get the fire started and had thrown paraffin on the fire, which had caused the whole stove to catch fire and eventually burnt the whole cookhouse down and the dining room. And this had placed us in a most unfortunate situation. We hadn't enough cooks to go around, so we put as many as we could. I think we had five people who could cook, and they were spread around the huts. But it was an awful situation to be faced, and we were like that for 10 days.
How cold did it get? I mean, there was wind and drifts, but how cold was it?
Dreadfully cold. It was to everyone was suffering from the cold. There was, despite the fact that there were these coke stoves in the huts, everything was frozen inside the huts. When you woke up in the morning, there would be white snow in the hut. There would be frost inside the corrugated iron sheets. For instance, a bucket of water would be frozen solid just by standing overnight. And one had to get washed as best one could with the small amount of water that was available.
What about the latrines?
The latrines had to be constantly kept clean and clear, but it was an upfight job. During this blizzard, which lasted 10 days, this whole situation was disastrous, really, because no one could move about. The men got into their huts and they literally had to stay there. And the situation became absolutely beyond anything that we could do about it. We being the officers, we were in the same situation as the men and couldn't move. We tried putting ropes around so people could cling onto the rope and move forward, but this didn't work very well.
The wind was that bad?
The wind was terrible. There were sheets of corrugated iron flying about, and it was actually dangerous to go out, to venture from one hut to another. When the blizzard eventually petered out,
that's after about 10 days.
10 days it lasted, and we ventured out to assess the situation. And in one case, we knew where there should be a hut, but we couldn't find any trace of it. So we got a party to dig down. And this we did. We got down 20 feet before we reached the roof of the Nissen hut. And there were two men inside. Unfortunately, they hadn't suffered a great deal, despite the fact that there was no outlet or inlet for fresh air.
That was a stores hut, I believe.
That was a stores hut. There were two storemen. But apart from being slightly suffering with the cold, but they were soon back to normal again.
How did the village manage, the Icelandic village?
The Icelandic situation, as far as we could gather, was the same as we were in, and they were kept into their houses. And of course, they had their animals in with them too. In some cases, horses, some cases, cows, who, in actual fact, when we saw them, they could barely walk. And it took a cow at least 5 minutes just to cross the road. Their limbs were so stiff and suffering from the freezing situation. The first thing we did to help the villagers as well as ourselves was to make up a party of men to dig out the generator, to get the bakery going again and getting the electric power put back into order. This took us 48 hours, and we were able to then get back to having some fresh bread, and the villagers were delighted that we had got the generator going again.
How did the villagers cope with these huge snowdrifts? I mean, didn't they get trapped in without any air?
Yeah, well, they didn't actually. They had, by experience, handed down, they used to have a chimney attached to the building, which was acting as an air duct, and they got the fresh air in. And these chimneys were something like 20 to 30 feet high, and we unfortunately hadn't learned the lesson.
Did you put them up after, having after the experience, or?
No, we never got that far, I'm afraid. We just had to accept the situation.
Now, you'd had a hard time. What about this outpost at Skagerstrand? Had you been there yet, or what happened
no.
to them?
We tried, knowing by telephone that they were in a difficult situation. We asked help from the Icelanders that they had. We knew they had horse sleighs. We tried that, but the horses couldn't move. The snow was up to the top of their legs and stomachs, and they just couldn't move at all. So then we decided that we must go by boat. The local fisherman tried to get his engine started, and it took us 48 hours to get the boat ready for the sea. We eventually went by boat up to Skagerstrand, but already the two soldiers who'd been on duty on the lookout and had very, very difficult situation to be in, they had been got out by...
Why was their situation difficult? Could you just explain? They were...
Yes, they were... The lookout post, actually, was about 15 feet down from the cliff top, and the cliff, with the snow and ice, made it impossible for them to get out.
Just too slippy?
Yes.
And with the wind?
It was a very difficult situation, and eventually the corporal in charge was lowered down to this cave-like lookout and helped to get the two soldiers out, hauled up the cliff with the help of the Icelanders. They were put into a local sort of hospital. Afterwards, the corporal in charge was awarded a medal.
Do you remember his name? Doesn't matter.
No.
Did you go around there on the boat to this?
Yes.
What state were they in, the men?
Well, they had experienced the same situation that we had already done at Blunders. But there were no real casualties there. They had managed to get themselves installed in their huts and were able to keep the fires going. And as opposed to our situation, they hadn't got blocked in the way we had.
They'd normally just be under the command of a corporal, would they?
This corporal was in charge there.